I'm really pleased to announce that I'm connecting with an old, with, I don't mean old literally, but with a colleague of mine in the broadcasting industry who is now a gut health coach. We welcome on board Stacey Holland. Stacey, wonderful to have you on board the show this afternoon.
Thanks so much for having me, Mike. It's good to be chatting to you again.
Oh, great to have you on board, Stacey. Let's get the topic going. Let's set the scene. Now, gut health, it's become something of a big wellness buzzword lately. Mm. From your perspective as a gut health coach, let's open it up to you. What does good gut health actually mean in everyday life?
It's such a good question, because when you start to delve into the state of the gut and what good gut health means, you start to realize that it potentially could be different for every person. Mm-hmm. The same as when we talk about healthy food, what does that actually mean? Because if someone eats broccoli, feels bloated, feels a number of side effects, does it necessarily mean that that particular food, though it is a healthy food, is healthy for that individual? Mm-hmm. But generally speaking, when it comes to gut health, we want someone to have a bowel movement every day, sometimes twice a day, no more than three times a day. That's a really good indication. We want to know that people don't feel bloated and experience indigestion, belching after having meals, for example. We also want to know that they're quite regular in their bowel movements. So upon waking up, they have the sensation to go, or perhaps it's in the afternoon, but usually it's at the same time every single day. And then we look at other systemic issues. For example, if someone is experiencing brain fog or hives and rashes on their body, one of the first places we'll look at is the gut. So when we say good gut health, we generally want someone to know that they're in a good state of health, they have mental clarity, physically they feel well, they're not experiencing joint aches. I mean, yes, those could be other issues, but they have regular bowel movement, they don't have issues, they're not straining when they go to the bathroom, mm-hmm. and it takes place at a similar time every day.
Stacey, I just want to fine-tune what you've just mentioned now, bowel movement and health. Once a day, is that okay? You mentioned twice or thrice, but I just want to establish some kind of a balance there.
Yes, it's definitely a minimum of once a day, unless you're on a specific diet where we know that that diet would then influence it and maybe it would be once every second day. However, for the general population and for most people, we want a minimum of once a day. Some people, yes, they have more frequent bowel movements for a variety of reasons, but the minute we go into the 2+, 3+ space, then we know mm-hmm. that we're leaning more towards diarrhea, whereas less than once a day, we're leaning more to constipation. Some people experience a combination of the two, which is definitely something that we don't want. We just want a regular, at least once a day, as a good indication of good gut health.
Okay. Stacey, what we're going to do is, before we get to the consumptive aspects of gut health, we're going to interrogate other aspects affecting this. So the next question to you is, why is then the gut often referred to as the body's second brain? And how does gut health affect things like, for example, your mood, energy levels, and immunity?
Yes, oh, such a brilliant question. It's one of the things that fascinates me. You know, as much as I've been studying the gut, we're still learning more and more about it. But one of the best ways that I can explain it is, think about your gut. Think about the size of your intestines, your stomach region. Mm-hmm. Now think about your brain. They have a similar shape, a similar size in weight, and it's called the enteric nervous system. So we have the central nervous system and the peripheral nervous system coming down from the brain into the body. The central nervous system is the brain stem, and then the peripheral nervous system are all those nerves that go into our periphery. But if you consider the nerves and the synapses and how the nervous system looks around the brain region, it actually represents what we see in the enteric nervous system, which is around the gut region, the intestines, the stomach region. That's one of the reasons we refer to it as the second brain. Another reason why we refer to it as the second brain is because one of our major nerves, it's called the vagus nerve, comes all the way down from the brain directly into the digestive system. It has a direct highway link between the two two systems. So what we experience in the stomach has a direct channel all the way into Wow. our brain and vice versa. And then one of the other reasons that we could consider it our second brain is because the amount of microbes that live within the digestive tract, they have their own brain almost. They're thinking themselves, they are Okay. operating themselves, and they also have a number of tasks that they perform and processes that they perform in the human body. And so all the things, all the instructions that the brain gives to the body for the various processes that need to take place on a daily basis, some and a huge part of those tasks are performed by the microbes that then sit in our stomach, in our digestive system. And so those are the reasons why we refer to it as the second brain. A number of neurotransmitters and hormones that the brain needs in order to issue messages to the various organ systems in our body are produced in the gut and metabolized, mm-hmm. which means they are transferred into various forms. That occurs in the gut as well. So those are all the reasons why our gut is our second brain.
Right. Following that highly detailed explanation, I think I'm going to have to go listen. I'm going to have to go to the archives. I'm going to have to go to the archives and just re-listen to that. I mean, wow, Tracy, Stacey, what an in-depth definition. But now, let's link that to my next question, which is what are some of the common signs now that someone's gut may be out of balance that people often ignore or even normalize?
Yes. So I like to look at it from the top down and the bottom up, basically. If we go
that's what
bottom
we look
up,
like.
Yeah. If you are struggling mm-hmm. to go to pass a stool to have a bowel movement every day, and when I say struggling, either to go or you're going too much, that is one of the first signs that we experience. So it's either chronic constipation or chronic diarrhea. Now, remember, I mentioned the word chronic for a reason. Mm-hmm. If you've gone out, you've had a bad meal, or you're traveling, or something is going on, and it's something that you don't usually experience, it might not be a sign of poor gut health. It's just, you know, that particular instance. It's circumstantial, you know. But if it's something that is going on for weeks at a time, months at a time, a minimum of 3 months of this particular pattern, and in fact, I would even say over 3 weeks, you start experiencing a similar type pattern, then I would say that is not a sign, or that's a sign of not necessarily having optimal gut health. And then when we move all the way up to the top, if you are chewing your food, you swallow your food, and immediately you start burping, belching. Once you've digested a meal, you're experiencing bloating or a pain, cramping sensation in the stomach. That's another initial sign. But there are other systemic reasons or symptoms, rather, that one could be experiencing. Skin conditions like eczema, psoriasis, or hives on the skin, joint pain, brain fog, all of those are linked to not optimal gut health, mood fluctuations, and mood swings. And that's something where we start to realize why it's a systemic thing, but it also needs to be treated holistically. If you think, oh, your mood fluctuations or your poor mood is just something that you need to speak to your psychologist, your psychiatrist, or your just your general practitioner about, without looking at the state of the gut, you can see how difficult it would then be to attain optimal health. So I would basically put it into those three major categories of are you burping, belching, experiencing those type of digestive issues, stomach ulcer, a burning sensation in the stomach? Are you struggling to pass stool or going too frequently? And then look at the body as a whole. What other type of systemic issues are you feeling? Joint pain, brain fog, skin conditions are usually some of the three major areas outside of the digestive system that people with a suboptimal gut health would be experiencing.
And Stacey, as we well know, we're living in a very demanding world for people juggling work, family, and daily pressures. So as the aspects of stress and lack of sleep, and you know, coupled with a fast-paced lifestyle impacting our gut health. What is your advice on that?
See, when we talk about the gut, we're not just talking about the intestines. We're talking about the stomach. We're talking about the liver. We're talking about the pancreas, the kidneys, all of these digestive organs. We're talking about the brain as well. It's about chewing your food and making sure that the salivary enzymes that help to start break down food and initiate the digestive process. Also, they have time to kick in. If you're eating in front of the television or eating on the go, you won't have optimal gut health because you haven't even allowed allowed for that process to take place.
Sure.
We cannot separate gut health and sleep or gut health and stress. The challenge with stress is that it really often is a perceived thing. It's the reason why one thing can be very stressful to one person and not stressful to another person. If we take exercise, for example, physiologically speaking, exercise is a stressor with long-term benefits. But if you're doing the wrong exercise, or you're doing a certain type of exercise and you're not sleeping and you have stress from work, then the body just sees it as a cumulative stress that you're experiencing.
Sure.
So in a time and a season where we're experiencing, you know, a great amount of stress, we will start to see that affect the digestive tract. In fact, one of the first things that I learned about the gut is that we're supposed to have, you know, an intestinal tract that has very tight junctions between each cell that are absolutely like almost glued together, but there is some flexibility there for movement. But when we're stressed, the body releases certain chemicals, certain compounds that start to stretch those junctions and open those junctions. And it's what people refer to for many years as leaky gut, and it's called intestinal permeability. Mm-hmm. What that does is it allows substances that we eat to get directly into the bloodstream and not go through the normal systems and channels that they should go through. So we can see how stress can directly impact sure. our ability to absorb food, digest food, and of course then it's going to affect your gut. So I would say one of the first things that we do need to consider when you are feeling particularly stressful is also start to look at the type of foods that you're constantly reaching for. It's usually high energy sugar type foods, processed foods. That's also going to affect your gut health as well.
Okay, let's elaborate on that. Everyday nutrition for someone wanting to improve their gut health or to maintain, you know, a healthy gut environment, if I can put it that way, given the fact that you've explained
yes.
how the gut interacts with
yes.
other organs. What are a few simple food changes they can start making today without completely overhauling their diet?
Yes, I think, you know, the complete overhaul is for someone who has been really struggling with symptoms and has not had any breakthrough, you know, and that's working with practitioners or not. Then you really have to say to yourself, how badly do I want to feel better? And if you really want to start feeling better, you have to take the step towards making major, major changes in your diet and nutrition. And sometimes not for a long period of time, but it does take the discipline of at least 3 to 6 months. But for someone who says, you know, it's just not optimal, you know, I have some of these symptoms that you've been talking about. One of the first things that most of my clients and the patients that come into the clinic that I work at, you know, where they experience relief, is taking things like gluten, dairy, and processed sugar and alcohol out of their diet. Just a couple of weeks okay. of removing gluten-based products, dairy-based products, alcohol, and processed sugar, they already start to feel better. And I mean, that's a no-brainer, right? Mm. But it just shows how those items wreak havoc. Starting to consume a little bit more water, but in, you know, incorporating some sodium in that, some electrolytes in that also assists. And then I know that many people say, oh, you need to increase your fiber. And yes, generally speaking, when you increase your fiber intake, it does support bowel movements. But we're increasingly seeing more and more people that don't do well on more fiber. And this is where we call it the dance of ensuring that you have better gut health. Sometimes you put something into the system doesn't necessarily respond the way you want to. You've got to take one step back, one step forward, sure. one step to the left, one step mm-hmm. to the right. And you can only do that with a practitioner that can say, ah, you know, this is a good food for most people, but clearly your body's not responding at this point in time.
Indeed.
So if you do those four foods that I spoke about, dairy, gluten, alcohol, and processed sugar, and you're still experiencing issues, that's when you got to switch into the dance of fixing your gut and work with someone to make sure that you can find a nutritional protocol that works for you.
Stacey, I've just received a message from one of our listeners. Her name's Yvonne. Mm. She says, hi, Stacey. I find I never had problems with bowel movements. One time I did, however, but no problem, just up my veggies. Have the full vitamin B complex and, of course, total addiction to gym. Never had any problems. Oh, and of course, collagen is so good. That's my take. Wonder if you agree.
Collagen fascinates me as well, because there are many people that say, once I started consuming collagen, and also when it comes to supplementation, you really want to know that it was produced properly, it's a high grade quality supplement. I've seen many people who think they have poor gut health come in and say, collagen is not an issue for me, it's everything else. And when we take their collagen supplement out, they actually start to do well. Now, there's a number of biochemical reasons that this could happen. And one of the reasons being the structure of collagen, it's not always easily absorbable as people think that it is. And so when we take it out and the digestive system does recover and does improve the efficiency in which it can work, then we see people start to be okay with their collagen supplement afterwards. However, I'm starting to see too many people come in to the practice and into the clinic. Once they take out their collagen supplement, they actually start doing better. So I suppose she would be one of those people where perhaps her gut health wasn't as affected. You know, she's quite in tune with her body, it sounds like it. She has an awareness of how her body's feeling, and so she felt great with it, but it's because her gut health was probably in quite an optimized state, and when she makes these tweaks like fiber and things like that, she can see how it assists her. However, when someone has severe dysbiosis or that intestinal permeability is a particular challenge, that's when we start to see that even so-called health-promoting foods like collagen can still produce issues for them.
Stacey, some people coming in on the show a little later, and this question I'm receiving now, many people turn to probiotics. Are supplements always necessary, or can we support gut health naturally through food?
I'm a food-first practitioner and coach. I believe that if we're going to invest in our health, I think that it serves us better, and it's a better long-term strategy from both a health and affordability perspective to always spend your money on the best quality food that you can find. Then if you still see flags coming up and you're still experiencing issues, then you can turn to supplements. And when you turn to supplements, it could be because you're traveling or because you're busy or you're going through a particularly stressful period of your life. For example, if work hours are changing, sure, you can support that with supplementation. But I'm always a food first approach person. So in lieu of probiotics, I would try to get people consuming things like kefir, kimchi, things like beet, kvass, and sauerkraut. I ask people to be very cautious with something like kombucha, because unless you're making kombucha at home, usually in order for kombucha to be shelf stable and for it to not rapidly ferment on the shelves, it's quite high in sugar. And if you're going to buy kombucha at home, take it home, allow it to ferment for 24 to 48 hours before you start consuming it, so it's not too high in sugar. But when it comes to probiotics, it's interesting because, again, some people do really well on probiotics and some people it exacerbates their symptoms. The reason being is because we don't really have good and bad microbes. We have beneficial microbes, opportunistic microbes, and pathogenic microbes. Now, the pathogenic microbes, we know they cause certain diseases and certain pathologies. Opportunistic guys, they can go either way. They can be the old quote-unquote good guys, but they could also become pathogenic. And then your beneficial microbes are what we're studying, and then we're putting them in capsules and we're hoping that it will promote health in the body. However, we study them in isolation. What we're starting to find out through our scientific studies and through evidence that's coming through in the scientific literature is that they live in an ecosystem where they seem to work better when they're in the ecosystem, which mimics what we see in the food-based products, which mimics what we see when people consume kefir, sauerkraut, kimchi, those type of things. And when we isolate a few beneficial microbes in some people, it produces health-promoting qualities. But in other people, why does it produce an exacerbation of symptoms? And it could be because it's lost its ecosystem and the health-promoting benefits of being in that food. So I'm always a coach that says, let's try and get it, you know, get the diet right, get the nutritional protocol right, then we'll see if supplements help. So I'm not bashing probiotics, but I always say start slowly, open up that capsule, sprinkle a little bit on your food first, see how you respond, and then go to a full capsule after that.
Right, Stacey, as we wrap up, here's your opportunity to somewhat chastise all our listeners to close off. So what is one small realistic habit listeners can start this week to support better gut health in the long term?
Oh, it's such a good question. I think the removing the four foods, it's difficult during the festive season. So I would ask that you just choose one food. But the thing that I want people to actually take away, start becoming a little bit more sensitive to your system, because we do have those signs that our body gives us. We go out for a meal with friends and family to a restaurant and we get that, oh, I don't feel quite as comfortable. But then we put it aside and we push it to the back of our minds. That's your digestive system speaking to you. And the more aware you become of that, the easier it is to solve your digestive issues when you sit down with a coach like myself, or when you listen to an interview like this and you want to then implement those things maybe in the new year or after Christmas and the festive season. So I would say that's your first port of call. And then give yourself a challenge, a minimum of 3 to 6 weeks, take out one of those items, alcohol, gluten, dairy, or processed foods and sugar, and see how your body responds. And then you can start adding in. Go slowly with any supplement or any probiotic food that you start, and just become more aware of how your body is talking to you and responding to what you're doing.
Stacey, it's been amazing having you on board the Home Run, and thank you so much for taking the time to join us with this detailed outline that you've given us this afternoon regarding gut health. And from all of us, from myself and all of us here at Chai, blessings this festive season and everything of the best in all your endeavors in 2026. Stacey, thank you once again. It has been great chatting to you again.